Parshas Pinchas also has other topics besides the story, the initial story of Pinchas. Middle of the Parsha talks about a theme that we really in more detail in next week's Parsha. And that is it's called the Nachala, the inheritance of the land of Israel. All of a sudden, in the middle of the Parsha, in the middle of these two things, talking about the service in the temple on the one side and the story of Pinchas saving the Jews from a terrible plague because they were following idol worship, we talk about the value of the land of Israel, and we talk about how to divide up the land. What was the process? How does each tribe determine who gets what? And only in next week's Torah reading, as I mentioned, it's two parshas from now, but it's next week's Torah reading, do we have the envelope, what is exactly that? The story is that there was a guy whose name was Slavkhod. And there was a guy whose name was Slavkhod, and this guy, Slavkhod, had died. Why he died is a matter of dispute in the Gemara. There's two different opinions. According to both opinions, he wasn't the best guy, let's put it that way. He died because of some sin he had done. As a matter of fact, it says so in the Torah. The Torah says that the daughters of Slavkhod came to Moshe, and they said to Moshe, "Moshe, we have heard that the land of Israel is not going to be given to the women. It's only going to be given to the men." Now, obviously, the women and the men are together in Judaism. You don't have two separate camps where a person doesn't have a son and a person only has daughters. That family is not going to inherit. And they'll have to, the girls will have to live somewhere. So they'll have to live, you know, with the cousins or somewhere. Obviously, there was going to be something. That's what they had heard. This is Rashi. Rashi says, and Moshe says, let me make sure. So Moshe, of course, goes to Hashem. And Hashem says to Moshe, that's not the way it is. It's not the way it is. If there is no sons, then the daughters will inherit. In fact, will inherit. When there are sons, then my idea, Hashem says, that the couple should have to get married to each other. You shouldn't have assets on your own, And the daughters of Slavkhod were considered very smart women for A, standing up for themselves, B, presenting their case in a very judicious way, in a very clear, and the way they developed their argument was considered to be very fair and clear. And Moshe was very impressed with their argument itself. They weren't just kicking and screaming, why am I this? They developed an argument logically, comparing it to other situations. And they were called chachmanios, wise women. And they were called mechabevei haaretz, women who loved the land of Israel. And in fact, because of the story of Slavkhod, the commentaries say that's why laws of Nachala, the laws of inheritance, of how to divide up the land of Israel, are given at this point. Because the story of Slavkhod happens at this point, so the daughters of Slavkhod, therefore the entire mechanism of how to inherit is also given at this point. So we see, first of all, the amazing power that the daughters of Slavkhod have to recognize what Hashem's will was, even though Moshe himself wasn't told that by Hashem, but they divined, so to speak. They felt that something's not right, can't be this way. And also the concept that the daughters of Slavkhod were the ones who gave the entire mechanism. Through them came the revelation of how the land was divided up. Okay, fine. Now comes the time to go into the land of Israel. So the generation of Jews who left Egypt were now given an opportunity to inherit even though they were not alive. Rashi explains to us complicated way. Interesting. Ramban does not agree with Rashi. There are different opinions how it worked. But Rashi does explain to us that the land was divided up two ways. First, the land was divided according to the families that are alive today. So if, let's say, for example, somebody had a number of children, Rashi gives this example, two brothers who left the land of Israel, who left Egypt. One brother has one kid, because that's just what happened, and the other brother has three kids. So now you take the one kid and the three kids, and you make portions for them. And then you go back, and the people who are alive today, and you take the land of Israel. You divide up the land of Israel according to the number of families that there are today. Then you go back and you take the land and you put it back into the hands of the people who left Egypt. That means that you had four portions, because these two brothers who left Egypt, one brother had one son, one brother had three sons. So now you have four portions for each of the families. Then you take these four portions and you give it back to the two brothers who left Egypt. So four portions go back to two brothers. And then you split it up again according to the families who are alive today. So that it turns out that the guy who has one son and the guy who has three sons each inherit equally. But the three sons get smaller portions than they would have received had you not done this mechanism of giving the land back to the older, to the old generation who died. So both generations were accounted for. You made the number of pieces of the pie according to who's alive today, but then you went back and recalculated the size of those pieces of pie according to the people who were alive when they left Egypt. Very fascinating. As I mentioned to you, Ramban does not agree that this was the way it was, but this is Rashi's opinion. Again, they're quoting sources in the Gemara and so on. The Rebbe talks about the following three concepts. There is, in the Torah, described that the land of Israel is called what's called a nachala. Nachla means an inheritance. It's called a Yerusha, and Yerusha is another word for inheritance. And it's called a Goral. A Goral is a word for a lottery. Because at the Torah describes also that after you made all these calculations, how did you know which tribe got which part of the land of Israel? So now you divided the land of Israel into parts. Now you got to give the parts to the people, right? So you took, I described to you, you took the land, you divided it into pieces, and you divided those pieces by section. You know, you didn't have families scattered over the land of Israel. So you wanted to keep it contiguous. You kept each tribe together in one section. But how did you decide which section went to which tribe? And the answer is that was a lottery. So there was, the lottery was that they took sections, logically, it seems, that they took sections. They divided the land into 12 pieces. They took a lottery, literally two pots, two baskets. They put the names of the 12 tribes in one basket. They put the names of the descriptions, the meets and bounds, the descriptions of the land into the second basket. And Rashi in the Gemara actually describes how Elazar, the high priest, the Kohen Gadol, dressed fully in the uniform of the Kohen Gadol, would stand in front of the two baskets, and he would announce with Ruach HaKodesh, with spirit of prophecy, that I am about to be pulled out is, let's say, for example, the tribe of Reuven. And about to be pulled out is the portion that is described by this and this meets and bounds. And then the person who, then he would say, next is going to be pulled out this and this tribe and this meets and bounds. And that is what happened. So the whole thing was, and Rashi further tells us that as the piece of parchment or paper or whatever it was pulled out with the description of the meets and bounds, there was a voice that came out, it appeared from the parchment that said, I am the meets and bounds that belong to such and such tribe. So that's called Goral. Goral means lottery. According to the commentaries, the lottery was then adjusted if it needed to be adjusted meaning the major points, the corners, so to speak, of that land were what the lottery said, but how the border went exactly from corner to corner, that could have been adjusted according to if the tribe that it was given to was bigger, larger, or smaller. A very complicated, interesting process, but it did have the component of goral, which means, again, a lottery. That's how the major portions were determined. It had the component which was logical of nachala, of inheritance, which was initially it was divided up by the families. As I mentioned to you, the process was a complicated process going back and forth to the two generations, leaving Egypt and entering Israel, sort of making a tivuch, putting them both together. And overall it was called a Yerusha, an inheritance. The Rebbe tells us the following amazing thought. When we talk about our relationship with Hashem, so the question is why? Why did the land of Israel have these three components? And the Rebbe says like this: when we talk about our relationship with Hashem, and we talk about our status as Jews, there is a beautiful prayer, a tefillah, a beautiful prayer that we say every morning at the beginning of the davening. And the prayer is as follows. Mayafa Yerushaseinu, how wonderful is our Yerusha, our inheritance. I'm starting the other way around. The prayer says as follows. Ashreinu, how fortunate we are. Matov chelkenu, how good is our portion. So matov chelkenu, how good is our portion. Uma no'im, and how pleasant goralenu is our lot, that we're Jews. Uma yafa, and how beautiful Yerushaseinu is our inheritance. So again, this prayer, which is an ancient prayer, Rebbe mentions that one of the earliest places we find it is in Rambam 800 years ago, 850 years ago, maybe earlier than that. So our earliest sages have told us that our relationship as Jews can be broken down as to be grateful. You should be grateful for your chelek, your portion, your goral, your lottery, the what you won in a lottery, and your Yerusha, what you have gotten as a Yerusha, as an inheritance. The Rebbe says, this is not just hyperbole. This is not just adjectives talking. What is the difference between having a chelek, a portion, a goral, a lottery, and a Yerusha, an inheritance? What's the difference as Jews? The Rebbe says like this. A chelek is something that you've earned. When we study Torah and we fulfill the mitzvahs, that becomes our chelek. That's our portion. A goral, a lottery, is something that you give to somebody else because they're participating in some kind of event. Not everybody has the right to be in that lottery draw. The people who have done a certain thing get their, you've earned a certain amount of points, you've done a certain thing, you get your name put into the lottery. So who wins the lottery is not according to what they did, but who enters the lottery is according to a certain status. So therefore, goral is a step up. Lottery is a step up. Chelek, you get according to what you did. Your portion, you get according to how you've studied, how you've fulfilled, and so on. Goral, which is lottery, you get because Hashem wants to give you. But again, why does Hashem want to give you? Because you've done certain things. And the Rebbe says, this is the difference between before the Torah was given and after the Torah was given. Before the Torah was given, we have chelek. It's like a child portion. After the Torah was given, we have goral. Hashem chose us. We say in the blessing before studying Torah and before being called up to the Torah, and then get an aliyah, we say, Asher Bachar Banu, Hashem, you chose us. So why did Hashem choose us? Hashem makes it clear in the Chumash why he chose us. He chose us because we are the children of Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, because of our DNA. That's why Hashem chose us. But once Hashem chooses us, that elevates us far beyond our own DNA. So we, as Jews, have a chelik. What's our chelik, our portion? The fact that we have a neshama inside of us that comes from Avraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, as we studied in Tanya, the idea that we have inborn natural love for Hashem, inborn natural appreciation for Torah and mitzvahs, even if you don't even know that you're Jewish. Even if a person doesn't even know they're Jewish, they were raised and they don't know they're Jewish. They were raised as some other religion because they're given away as a child. Holocaust babies, who knows who was given away as a child. That individual still has DNA. One day that person will wake up and let alone if a person was raised as a Jew but just doesn't know what Judaism is all about and this and that. So expose that individual to true Torah and true mitzvahs, the neshama responds. Why? Because of your spiritual DNA. That is a gift, plain and simple. DNA is not something you work for. But then Hashem chose us after that as a nation. And that choosing was a step up, and that's the goro. So Hashem chose the Jewish nation beyond the fact that we're just plain children of Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov. And of course, the Gemara tells us, and the Chumash, in fact, tells us, not clearly, but it's derived from the words of the Chumash, that each of our neshamas, each of our souls, were at Har Sinai, at Mount Sinai, when the Torah was given. We were all there. That means that each of us was specifically chosen when Hashem gave us the Torah. We were all there. We were all elevated. Every neshama that was ever to be born was at Mount Sinai. So each of us was given not just the DNA, the children of Avraham Yaakov and Sarah Grochalea, not just our great ancestors, that mila, that advantage, that quality, but we were further enhanced and uplifted by Hashem choosing us at Matan Torah, at the giving of the Torah. After that, we're still, however, once we're chosen, we're still two separate entities. God is choosing us. Hashem is choosing us. We are still two separate entities. Where is the seamless unity that the Zohar talks about? The Zohar says, Yisrael, Oraisa, Kutshabricho, Kulachad. That means that the Jewish nation and the Torah and Hashem are seamless. We have, whatever this means, how could Hashem be seamless? Obviously, there's some mystical stuff going on here, but that's what the Zohar says. That we, the Jewish people, and the Torah have a seamless connection. And we further have each a seamless connection, Torah with Hashem, and Jews with Hashem, and Jews with Torah. It's a circle, it's a round circle. Each entity of these three entities are intertwined rings, the Zohar explains, that is each connected to the other seamlessly. So where do you see the seamless? And the answer is that aspect of our seamless connection, that's called Yerusha. That's called inheritance. Because the law is that the individual that inherits from the person who is giving the property is, in the language of the Gemara, b'makom hamorish, is literally as if that person is the same. Whatever responsibilities, whatever privileges, whatever the first generation had, when that generation gives the inheritance over, obviously the person has to pass away in order to get the inheritance, you become exactly 100% taking over the place of the first generation. So that's a seamless connection. You are b'makom hamorish, which means in the spot, in the place, completely taking up the place of the person giving the inheritance. So that's the three levels of connection that we have with Hashem. Connection number one, children of our great people. Connection number two, Hashem chose us at a certain point in our history, individually, us, each of us, yes, because we were at Matan Torah. Connection number three, Hashem says, I am going to give you a seamless connection, and this is, of course, from the coming of Mashiach. We're going to feel this connection when Mashiach comes. Matter of fact, Rebbe points out that this is a statement made at the end of the Mishnah, where it says that Hashem is going to give to each tzaddik 310 worlds, levels of spirituality, and we are each called tzaddikim. So this is the the thought, therefore, in this week's Torah portion, when we talk about the inheritance of the land of Israel, the land of Israel is considered to be a spiritual pool. It's not just a physical place. The land of Israel is the land where Hashem directs his spiritual energies. And when the Torah says that we have each a chelek, meaning the logical process, as I described to you initially, that was according to how big we are and small we are. That's a logical process. That's according to what we did. Meaning how many children do you have? Plain and simple. That's a logical process. That's according to what you are. And we have a process that we're given according to tribe, which was a mystical process, goral process, a lottery, a speaking lottery, some really strange lottery. But then we have a Yerusha, which is each individual Jew's personal connection to the land of Israel, wherever we are, whether we're living in Israel, not living in Israel, whether we realize it or we don't realize it, each of us have a personal connection to the physical land and therefore to the spiritual land of Israel, meaning to the spiritual pool of energy that Hashem sets up. So this week's Torah portion, therefore, is a very empowering, talks about the not only the interconnection between the Jews, but the connection that we have to the physical country Israel, to the spiritual pool of energy that's called Yisrael. And as the Gemara tells us, that Yisrael is an initials for the phrase, there are 600,000 letters to the Torah, Yesh Shishim Ribo Osios LaTorah, 600,000 letters to the Torah, that ultimately, what is Yisrael? What is us, Am Yisrael, the nation of Israel? And what is the country of Israel? Is connection seamless to Hashem, Yerusha, inheritance. Each of us has a part. So this is a little talk for today. And with this, I will conclude. A lot of stuff. And I wish you a Shabbat Shalom. We should have Mashiach coming still today. And especially as we are now in the 3 weeks, we are mourning the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the first Beis HaMikdash, second Beis HaMikdash. And as we say, Ad Masai, how long and how is this going to continue? I just saw a clip before this morning before I opened up the Zoom. This mother of this staff sergeant who was killed by this Arab terrorist, you may have seen the news, opened fire on a bunch of soldiers and killed the staff sergeant, murdered a staff sergeant, and the mother is screaming at the funeral, Ad Masai, how long? So the lot of tsaris, we're very grateful for the fact that we are Ashreinu, Matov Lokeinu, Manoim Goralenu, Mayafir Shasenu. We are very, very grateful, of course, for the privilege of being Jews. But we tell Hashem, Ad Masai, how long are we going to continue not having the Yerusha, not having the Chelik and the Goral? And I just want to conclude on a positive note that Chassidim say, Chassidim translate this as follows. Ashreinu matov chalkenu. How good it is that we are Jews. We're Jews. Umanoim garaleinu. How wonderful is our lot that we are Chassidim. Umayafi Yerushasenu. How wonderful is in our inheritance that we are Chabad Chassidim. Chassidim of the Rebbe. That we can learn from the Rebbe. We can connect ourselves to the Rebbe's way of thinking, a way of looking at the spiritual world and the material world. This is really, really very, very special. And in fact, it's something that we should be very, very grateful for, that we have this ability. And this is something which is literally changes your outlook, your whole outlook on life, and your whole outlook on Torah, and your outlook on the physical world, the spiritual world. So lots of beautiful stuff. Shabbat Shalom. Have a wonderful Shabbos, a good Shabbos to everybody. And Mirtz Hashem, hope to see and continue talking and learning Mirtz Hashem on Monday. So, all the best.
Thank you so much. Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you.
Ina, if you have any comments on the estate planning aspect, you can always. always.
Well, I'm very close to the source right now. I'll come in after Shabbat. Estate planning division of land. I'll go take a look at the source of this Torah portion falls. Very HP moment for me, but we'll talk about it later when I get back. But
well, you got to stake out.
I'm looking at the source right now. I can tell you.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I have to go ask on the portion. Yeah,
you have to take your portion. You know, you have to stake out. This is what you want.
Yeah.
You know, you can listen. You can make. You can at least put it.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking. It's a local call for me. It's going to be a local call. But I was thinking that the surveys are done this way, that the survey of the land is done from point A to point B because you don't know. And then pretty much like how do you stake out the in the wild, wild west? It was, everyone saw this, the Yellowstone, right? You just came in and then you just killed everyone around. And then you just put your stake in where you wanted to be and you threw the Indians out and this is my land, right? But yeah. Here is a much more humane way to divide. You actually like had the voice told you, this is your portion, go get it. So,
I guess that's very interesting. It is interesting that, as you say, the tribe of Menashe, because the tribe of Yosef was divided into two, Menashe and Ephraim. So the Tanakh tells us later on that each tribe was given the responsibility to go conquer their land. You know, you were given land, but there were seven tribes, some of them very, very powerful, living, plus other people too, living in the land of Israel. It wasn't, they didn't come into an empty country. So they were given the meets and bounds, and then they were told, now go conquer it. Some tribes worked harder and some tribes didn't work as much, or they were more afraid, or the people living there were tougher. Some places the people were easier. So for example, the Tanakh tells us that the tribe of Menashe specifically didn't do their job. They didn't conquer. They didn't take away, kick out the cities of people. Because it wasn't their fault 100% because the people were very tough, those tribes living there. So they came to Joshua, and they complained. And they said, we need more land because the land that you gave us is not able to be conquered. Whole story. And it wasn't actually until the time of King David, which was almost 400 years later, that the land was conquered completely. So it took a long time for the Jews to actually conquer the land of Israel. And even that didn't last because they were, again, just like we have today in Israel, terrorists operating in the West Bank and here and there, and there's some places, and the Jews can't go in. Same thing, same exact same thing happened for all the time we were in Israel. There were very big sections, except for certain times in history when the Jewish king was very, very powerful and wise and able to make law and order. But again, the government, elections have choices. Who the people elected as king was, and who was born as king, was made a very big difference politically. So very fascinating, the human side, the real side of how we're talking here, a very highfalutin spiritual concepts. But this had to be translated, obviously, into physical boots on the ground. It didn't always work exactly the way. So a lot to talk about, a lot of interesting stuff. Shabbat Shalom.
Rabbi, quick question.
Yes.
Shabbat Shalom, but I have a quick question.
Yeah.
I read that the Moshe Rabbeinu's, it's also in this big parsha that we're told that we're going to die, right? Miriam dies and Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron are going to die as well.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then kind of Moshe Rabbeinu, his successor is not taken over. His son's not that well. And we also learned that his own grandson is worshiping idols. And then the tribe takes him, we walk and we see him in the house that he serves as a leader for someone who is worshiping idols, and they take him and say like, oh, go come with us, something like this. I this is something that I learned. Rabbi Sachs has this portion, but I was very like kind of disappointed, and he talks
in length
about how.
There is a comment.
Rabbi Sachs talks.
Go ahead.
No, Rabbi Sachs talks about Lenz, how
you may have a child who is not following in your footsteps, moreover, who is not a righteous, or maybe not yet righteous, maybe, so you have to give him time. Then he gives a lot of examples how bad kids turn out from righteous people. And he goes through a list of examples. That's kind of scares me.
And why do you have to go and think of examples? Every child, every Jew is a child of Abraham and Sarah, right? Abraham and Sarah were very righteous, and Yitzhak and Rivka very righteous. But look at Abraham's had a child, Ishmael, and Yitzhak had a child, Esav. So you don't have to, you know, think of far examples. Fortunately or unfortunately, every single person has free choice. And we can direct, and Hashem sets us up for success. Hashem puts us into the world and gives us an envelope to work within, but then gives us free choice. And as parents, we are similar. We're not greater than God. So Hashem looks and he says, I'm very disappointed at your choices. And as parents, we say the same thing. I'm disappointed in your choices, but I don't control you. As a matter of fact, because I love you, I'm going to give you free choice so that you should appreciate what you have. So this is a very big discussion, obviously. But we are no different than our Creator. And Hashem wants that the world should operate with free choice and people should not feel forced. And the corollary to that, the byproduct of free choice, is you can make bad choices. So doesn't mean that that's what we want, clearly, obviously, but the possibility does exist. And because the possibility for bad choices exists, therefore we get rewarded when we make good choices. So if not for the possibility of choice, there would be no reward either. What can I tell you? And Moshe was in the same spot as Abraham was, as Yitzchak was, and he had a child. His children were not bad, Moshe's own children, but they weren't on the level that that Yehoshua was. There's a beautiful comment on this week's Parsha, I asked the question, why is it that in this week's Parsha, we talk about the laws of inheritance? So what I said a few minutes ago was the idea that the daughters of Tzlafchot came, but there's a little more to that story. As you mentioned, Moshe was told by Hashem that he's not going to go into Israel. So he says to Hashem, if I'm not going to go into Israel, I want my children to inherit me, meaning to inherit my position. So Hashem says, no, that's not my decision. Yehoshua, who is the one who put the hard work in and was by your side, studying Torah with you, self-sacrifice, doing whatever, you know, sticking with the master, sticking with the teacher all the time, he's going to be the one who is going to inherit you and not your children. Moshe was upset about it, obviously, but that's what Hashem has said, and, you know, Moshe accepted like everything else. And the Torah uses the language when it comes to inheritance. It doesn't say in the Chumash that you should inherit, give as an inheritance. It says, v'ha'avartem, you should pass it over. Very interesting. So the commentaries say, why should you pass it over? Why does it use the word lehanchil or lehorish? And what does it say? Veha'avartem, you should pass over the piece of land, because this is an allusion to the fact that Moshe's kids were passed over. And also, the word for passing over is word for anger, is the same. Evra is anger. And ha'avartem is to pass over. So Hashem was upset at Moshe that he hadn't put the effort into teaching his children. A lot to talk about, but at any rate, you are correct. This is the story that Moshe is not; his children are not given the leadership of the Jewish people. Even though the halacha is, and Rambam rules this as a halacha, that any person that has any position, if that person passes away and they have a child who is worthy of that position, the child gets first dibs, first rights to that position. Rambam says, even if the position is who should be the wood chopper for the city, who should be the water carrier for the city, let alone who should be the mayor of the city or the king of the country, the person who is a child gets first dibs. We believe in nepotism. We believe that a person has the right, in fact, the obligation, according to halacha, to see to it that their children take over their position, which implies also that they should educate their children in order to be able to be worthy. Because if they're not worthy, then they don't get the position. And that's also a part of it. You have to be worthy. But the whole story, obviously, a lot to talk about, as with every parsha, a lot of interesting threads that are interwoven and play and teach us many, many beautiful things. And of course, at the end of the day, it's all about positivity. So it's all about having the pride and joy in ourselves that we are so connected to Hashem and to the land, and hopefully transmitting that pride and joy to our children, that they should feel special also. And if we don't succeed, unfortunately, sometimes we don't succeed in that transmitting, then we have to say Hashem is the boss, and we will not stop loving our kids. We'll continue doing whatever we need to do from our part, and that our child hopefully will make a better choice one day. But we should know from our side that our job is to give. Our job is to be influencers. Today, that's the term that you got to use. Got to be an influencer. And if the person doesn't want to be influenced, then you have to try maybe a little nuance, influence in a different way. And if you're not successful at the end of the day, that's your job is not to be successful. Your job is to do your job. And this, where does it say this? It says this right in Pirkei Avos. It says, you're not going to finish the job, but you should know that you have to at least do the work. Don't worry about finishing the job. Hashem will finish the job for you. You do the work. Don't think that if you don't finish the job, you shouldn't do the work. No, you do the work. That's your job. That's our job. So it's a difficult pill sometimes to swallow if we don't see success in what we're doing. But Hashem says, success is up to me. I want you to work. So this is another further message from the parsha.